Apologies, everyone. I'm slightly late today, running a bit late, but it's normally you keeping holding me up, so thank you for bearing with us. Obviously, special council meeting this evening, so we'll try and get through the agenda as quickly as we can and let you all away. We have with us here this evening representatives from the Housing Executive, and I'm going to pass over firstly to Trevor initially, who's going to kick us off with their presentation. Following the presentation, councillors, there will be a period for you to ask questions, and both Loma and Trevor will do their best to answer your questions put to them. I would ask councillors, and I'll remind you again shortly after the presentation, that we've already had a period this afternoon, quite an extended period for DEA clinic meetings, so I hope that the majority of issues within your DEA will have been raised during the clinics, and if there are any outstanding issues or strategic issues that you need to raise, then we will do so during the question and answer period. So I'll pass you over to Trevor.
Thank you, Trevor.
Thank you very much for inviting us here. My name is Trevor McCartney, Director of Corporate Services with the Housing Executive. Joined the Housing Executive last year and very proud so far of the work the Housing Executive has done. Hopefully you are too. The journey down here, I have to say, was probably one of the nicer journeys I've had to any of these presentations. Certainly a beautiful part of the world. The way we're going to... No, I drove from Belfast, but I can't comment on that. Very nice to be here. What we're going to do is I will take you through the difference between what you've seen previously in your council meetings, which would have been a district housing plan, a one-year plan, instead of what we're doing now, which is a housing investment plan. It's a four-year plan. You'll see in the document itself it can stretch out strategically over 10 years, and there are clear reasons why we're doing that. Any individual issues in the area type information, I'll pass to Loma for that, but I'll take you through the main presentation. First of all, new housing investment plans, as I've already said, they do replace our district housing plans, and they have two main purposes. First of all, Housing Executive is obliged, statutorily obliged, in the 1981 Housing Order to report to councils on its past year's performance and its next year's, but as I've already said, this takes it further than that in terms of a time frame. Councils now have planning powers. So obviously this becomes all the more relevant because of that. So the HIP will inform community planning and widen that discussion, that debate in terms of some of the things that we need to work with councils on. In terms of preparation of the housing investment plan, you're aware that back in the housing executive we have some very good people who are very good at analysing the housing market, taking that kind of horizon scan as to what we need to do in each of the areas. So we have researched what you've seen in this report extensively. We have also looked throughout the housing industry in terms of best practice examples and the sort of things that we can bring in. We have put those into that report. We've also gone through an extensive information gathering and consultation process with a range of stakeholders, not only housing associations, but our colleagues in NEFA, colleagues in DSD, DOE, Land and Property Services, estate agents, and a whole range of other people to make sure this isn't just the Housing Executive putting forward to you what our view is. Many other standard bodies, industry bodies have been consulted on this. You've already had some discussion in March where some of our people have met with you to go through some of these strategic issues, so that will have fed into this as well. So a quick overview of the housing investment plan. It's obviously quite a meaty document. It provides an overview of the housing market in your area, near Eamore and Down. It examines cross-tenure housing issues, and it is a four-year plan with an annual update and intervening years, and that's important to us in the sense that we're not living day-to-day, we're not living hand-to-mouth, we're taking a long-term view because that's what you need to do with housing. And more importantly, every single year we will track against this plan to make sure we actually are delivering what we're supposed to deliver. It does reflect community planning priorities, and it does contain five themes with 10 outcomes. That simplifies what we're actually trying to do and how we're trying to explain it. It also covers detailed social housing investment at a local level. The Housing Executive is now named as a community planning partner, and that's something we take very seriously. It's an opportunity for both the Council and for the Housing Executive to form a wider conversation piece in terms of what we're doing with housing. So it's more interactive, less about what we can do and you can do separately, more about what we can do together. It is an evidence base for the community plan, and again, that's important. The wealth of information we have at the centre from the Housing Executive, we need to bring to bear. That will help you to make decisions, help us to make decisions, and help us to do those things collaboratively. And it will initiate discussion amongst partners in the shape of future housing in Uri, Mourne and Vine. So what are the themes? First of all, as you would expect, identify and meet housing need and demand in terms of waiting lists, who needs housing, kind of housing they need. Improving people's homes, so the stock that we currently have, and even wider, what can we potentially do to improve the stock that's there. Transforming people's lives, so if you look at the people in our houses and our homes, what can we do in terms of improving those to make sure that they're fit for purpose and can support people. Enable sustainable neighbourhoods speaks for itself. One of the biggest challenges in Northern Ireland is obviously how we all work together, how we live together, how we play together. That will form part of those processes going forward, and delivering quality services. Each theme is a section within the Housing Investment Plan. Challenges, opportunities and actions are discussed under each of those themes. They're in the document for you to review. And key actions to achieve each outcome are set out in tables which show last year's performance, actions for the next 5 years and a longer term look. Loma's going to cover now some of the key detail in this area.
Okay, thanks Trevor. Yes, the next couple of slides will show you the Housing Executive's investment in this area. So this slide here, which doesn't actually include public sector investment from housing associations and DSD yet, we are hoping that with further consultation with stakeholders in the coming years, we will be able to provide you with more of that information. So this is purely Housing Executive investment going into Newry, Mourne and Down. And then you can see that there is a high level of investment, and this obviously will give us over the years potential to target those resources to help meet the outcomes that we want coming out of the community planning process. Just that slide there, particularly is your maintenance investment over the past year, and we did have a strong emphasis on getting the heating programme through the district. So heating accounted for a lot of the investment that went on over the past year. So key housing issues for Newry, Mourne and Down. These are discussed in further detail in the HIP, but just to pull out a few of them for you. We do have an ageing population. It is estimated that by 2023, older people will make up approximately 17% of the population. So that will have a knock-on impact for us in the design of houses, making sure that housing is suitable for people and that there's the right support services. Energy efficiency, it's a big one that we all know about. A lot of our tenants, about 45% actually of homes, are in fuel poverty. So as the Energy Conservation Authority for Northern Ireland, there's work for the Housing Executive there too. The social housing stock, the Housing Executive in this area has 5,389 units. A lot of our stock has been sold, but there's a lot of new housing association stock coming on board. Applicants on the waiting list, our waiting lists continue to grow. So Newry and Downpatrick, even within the context of the whole province, would have high housing need and high housing demand. You can see that there's over 3,600 people on the waiting list for houses, and over 2,000 of these would be considered to be in housing stress. And over the last year, over 1,300 people presented as homeless, and of those who presented, 57% were accepted as priority homeless. Moving on then to the new build, we had 513 social housing allocations in the past year, but we estimate that we need over 1,500 new units over the next 5 years. There were 676 new build starts, and out of those, 106 were for social housing. And we had 135 new social homes completed throughout the year. So future issues, we do need a high housing social need programme with 729 in the programme. You can see that in the appendices at the back of the HIP. We would be looking to encourage mixed tenure developments and more affordable housing. We need a broader range of options for people because social housing, Housing Executive and Housing Association is not going to meet all the need. And there's issues as well around availability of land in some of our smaller settlements. And then we do have the unknown impact of welfare reform. So we're keeping an eye on that to see where that goes. So I'll pass you back to Trevor just for the last.
So in terms of next steps, you can see obviously it is a very comprehensive document and there's a lot to go through in that. But what we really want is your feedback on that document. What do you think is right? What do you think we can potentially improve on? And the manner of that feedback will take in any form so that we can build it into it. We obviously need to review this. I've mentioned that before. This is not something which is a pretty document which is going to end up on your desk and not go anywhere. This means something to us. So we will be tracking against that every single year to make sure we do something with it. And the community plan, the new local development plan, that should all fit together. So again, as your feedback comes into this, we can assess the extent to which that actually works together. And if it does, great. If it doesn't, again, we'll work on that as we need to going forward. So happy to take any questions.
Okay, thank you, Trevor and Loma. Councillors, it's open to the floor then. If anyone has specific questions to put to the representatives. Councillor Highland.
Right, I don't know the exact number, Davey, but there's quite a few housing associations active. So they mightn't have their headquarters or their base in Newry Morning Down, but I would say most of the housing associations would be represented. You have the big ones that you'd all be familiar with, like Fold, Helm, Apex. You have smaller ones like Clan Mill, Ulidia, Arc. I could go on. There's plenty. There's good representation from housing associations, yeah.
I know that that was taken out of your hands a number of years ago, and I think it's a very bad decision that central government did take on that issue. But nevertheless, a lot of people want to use the housing tracker to get on the first steps of housing.
Obviously, you're aware that housing executive in its own right can't build houses, and that is an issue that we face. But where we do play a role is in looking at the available land, how we assemble that land to make that available to housing associations in order that they can build. We're actually going through a process at the minute of looking at how we can best do that land assembly, looking at the land we have available to us, looking at how we work with housing associations, looking at the housing association grants associated with that. You couldn't make that up. And at the end of that, no, I wasn't. And at the end of that, then hopefully we will have a much better process, and that is a piece of work that's live at the minute.
I apologise, Trevor. I don't know who the culprit was yet. No one's owned up to it.
It wasn't me.
It wasn't Henry. Henry, you're lit up there for a contribution.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can assure you that wasn't me. It was some abstract music going on to my left-hand side there. I wasn't able to get to the consultation today, I'm sorry, because I was up in Kilkeel, but a couple of small issues there about kitchen replacements and things like that, but Loma, I'll email those on to you if that's okay. But one of the problems, when you look at your figures there and see so many people who need, desperately in need of social housing and people in housing distress, 2,000 I think was the figure you quoted, so many people presenting homeless. You know, if in a situation whereby there was a lot of refugees brought into this area, would they become priority? Would they get a priority status then over the existing homeless, or how would it work?
Thank you. There is work ongoing at the minute with a multi-agency approach on potentially what could happen with refugees. But in everything that I've heard so far, there is no assumption that refugees will be prioritised in any way, but that multi-agency approach has not yet produced an output that would give us a clear direction forward on that. But when that happens, we're happy to come back and talk to you about that.
Thank you, Trevor. Councillor Quinn.
Thank you, Chair. Just thank you very much for the presentation. Just a couple of wee points. There seems to be that people were very happy with the job that the Housing Executive had been doing for many years. But now there seems to be this blurring since housing associations were put onto the map. So we weren't able to hear the number of housing associations there were. Do we have any clue at the resources, I mean money in the bank, that they have? And is there any examination of how many, the number of housing associations, each have to keep an office, their own admin branch, how much of the allocation that should be building houses is being burnt up looking after admin for these housing associations? And a lot of this blurring that's happening with social housing and affordable housing and the different terms that it's being put under. People need houses. And I think the feeling out there on the ground is that we could do without a lot of the housing associations and put it back under the umbrella of the Housing Executive.
Obviously, from a Housing Executive point of view, we wouldn't be aware of the extent to which the cost base of the housing associations impact on their ability to do anything going forward. But the Department for Social Development will certainly, as part of their inspection and governance regimes that they operate with the housing associations, be very aware of that. But it's not something that I could give you a clear answer to.
Thank you, Trevor. Councillor Quinn, you're right in. Thank you. Councillor McKee.
Chair, thank you. Just I see that you're in partnership with the associations. I take it as the Housing Executive sort of the umbrella for the associations?
No, the Housing Executive is not the umbrella for the associations. We have a regional services side to our organisation, and in that regional services side we have access to land, information. We also distribute housing association grants to the housing associations. We allocate money that they can use to build, but we don't have any oversight of the housing associations themselves. That's entirely down to the Department for Social Development.
Go ahead.
The reason I'm asking that is because particularly in developments where there's a community atmosphere, and for example, if there's 100 houses, is it a case of where there might be 50 allocated away, 50% Protestant Catholic, and trying to keep that community spirit within that? I just know from recent experience in a particular area in this district that is not happening. And I'm just wondering, if that was the situation and one section of the community has found themselves in a position where they need emergency housing and have the highest score, say, of points, is it a case of putting everybody, and just as quickly you can get them off the list and into houses, and not really taking into consideration that 50-50 split that once was there, and then all of a sudden it becomes, you know, out of balance, and that's page friction within housing development, but it's all going at this moment in time.
I absolutely understand your question, but one of the things that even in my short time in the Housing Executive, you can see it very clearly prides itself on, is complete and utter fairness. And allocations are made purely on need, not on any other basis whatsoever in any way. So we wouldn't consider anything other than the points allocation that they've received against the available housing stock in the area. That's it, nothing more.
Thank you, Trevor. Councillor Burns.
Thanks, Chair, and sorry I was late in, so I missed the slides. But just in regards to the housing investment plan, and apologies if you've already answered this, but when are you expecting to see a draft version of this plan? I'm concerned the community plans are due to be completed by the start of the next council term, or next council year, sorry. It would be probably realistic to expect them to be late, but if the two are to complement each other, do we expect a draft version certainly by the turn of the year, or
it should be with you now, so we have it here.
Use of the draft version here.
That is it for consultation at this point in time, so we can take feedback on the basis of this. If you haven't got it, we'll get one to you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Hannah.
My question is slightly different. It's on the heating and insulation in the windows and that there. I assume that the housing executive has responsibility for that then, you know, how the grants are dispersed and whatnot. It's just the concern I would have, you mentioned earlier on that it's almost going, in another few years it's going to be one person in five, it's going to be in that age group, you know, being in the elderly. Some of them, to be quite honest, there's one gentleman from Brinesford that has been in touch with me and was looking about windows, and he finds it very frustrating, say, those getting through the bureaucracy. Is there any way it could be simplified a little bit more just to make it easier? Because elderly, to be quite honest, they're easily confused, some of them, and to steer them through it, it just takes a bit more effort. And the other thing, on heating and insulation and windows and things like that, have you target set, or is it just by the amount of funds you actually have in your control? Is that how you use that?
It depends which aspect you're talking about. If it's not a housing association or a housing executive tenant and it's through grant aid, then there has to be a grant available with key criteria behind it for the particular kind of work that your client is actually looking for. If that's not there, it's an entirely different debate. If the funding's not there and there isn't a scheme there to support that, then we're limited in terms of what we can obviously do. If it's a housing executive tenant, then we do have a planned maintenance scheme, and the question then becomes when that scheme becomes live in the area that your client is in, and also the current state of their property. Loma will have more detail on that, but it's the difference between the two.
Thank you, Trevor. Okay, Councillor. Councillor Casey.
Thanks, Chair. I know housing stock is reducing all the time. It's become more and more difficult to place people. And my concern is people whose relationships are broken up, marriages are broken up. The court ruled in favour of the mother and the children. That's fine. I have no issue with that. But the person, the husband, the father, he's more often than not, he's living in a car, or he can't afford private rent because he's maybe on the dole or something. But he can't get to somewhere where he's able to take his children to visit him. You know, a two-bedroom flat or two-bedroom house. Has there ever been a proper assessment done on, you know, how many people find themselves in that particular position? And the other issue is there are proposals to build almost 1,600 new social housing issues over the next 5 years. Smaller houses for people who maybe want to downsize. Someone has the family are reared and gone. They're sitting, himself and herself are sitting in a three-bedroom house owned by the housing executive. It's too big for them. Will betide if welfare reform comes in and that bedroom tax is ever in place, but I don't think it will be in the north. Let's hope it won't. But they'll find themselves in a position where they'd like to downsize. Is that going to be factored into your housing action plan going forward?
Your point's well made, Councillor Casey. We are aware in the housing executive that our biggest demographic in terms of growth is that single man demographic, and we do look at our available stock and the extent to which we can map against that. And you're right in that where there's a breakdown in a relationship and a father does have children, that can be somewhat challenging, but we are restricted in terms of what we can do with that. We have to look at the available stock against the pointed need for the individual and map it that way, but it is absolutely something that we consider in these plans going forward as a demographic.
Just to make a point on that, that issue is coming up to us a lot, Councillor Casey, and the difficulty, I suppose, for the single parents, the males in particular, is you can't award priority homeless status to the mother and the father for the access to children. The dependents can only be dependent to mother or father, and that's where we find that a lot of these single fathers are getting into difficulty. They will be awarded a room for access, but probably, Charlie, what you're referring to is the points, that they don't get enough points. Yeah. The other thing as well I would say is, in light of welfare reform going forward on the new build programme, we are trying to encourage housing associations that at least 20% of their stock should be one bedroom.
We also look, as Trevor said, very carefully at the mix that's on our waiting list, and as that is smaller families or single adults, that's the type of accommodation that we're encouraging the housing associations to build.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Clark.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks for the presentation. I suppose my apologies for not making the DAA workshops. We were at another engagement. In regards to, it's following on with what Councillor Casey said in regards to single units, probably the most difficult housing stock as an elected representative we'd have to deal with is the single units, flat accommodation. And my big issue, and maybe through community planning, that will be the conduit to improve the well-being in them units. It's in particularly in relation to collaboration between the housing executive, the health trust, the PSNA and the council, you know, looking at complex problems in regards to people who are living in that accommodation. In regards to, there's been a number of attacks, arson attacks in the Newcastle area, for example, in Bracken Avenue, and last week there was two arson attacks, which involved, you know, very vulnerable people being intimidated, you know, in their homes. You know, an 84-year-old woman, a registered blind person, you know, people with incapacity issues. You know, there's a real issue in regards to the security in the communal areas of them housing, but also in regards to the people who are being accommodated. They're left to their, you know, in many cases people have complex needs, and they're left to their own vices in regards to, you know, how they get on with their daily lives. So I think there needs to be a clear focus, you know, and a coordinated approach in dealing with these issues in particular. Almost like a task force in regards to dealing with it. If I'm finding they're the most biggest issues in my workload, then surely they're the biggest issue in your workload as well. So I think we need to certainly work together in dealing with a lot of these issues and having a coordinated approach, you know, and focusing on them on a continual basis, not just one-offs, but on a continual basis, be it environmental health issues, be it in regards to, you know, addictions, you know, looking at, you know, antisocial behaviour, looking at, you know, the upkeep of the estate or the premises. No, so I think we need a holistic approach, and we need to focus down, drill down, and ensure we find ways of curing or preventing a lot of these issues that happen. I just feel that people are just left, as I said, to their own vices. I'm just interested in your comments in regards to that.
Trevor, just very briefly before you do come in, can I just remind councillors, please, to be respectful when in the chamber, respectful that there's discourse going on here, and two occasions now we've been interrupted, so if anyone else has mobile phones or iPads or any electronic devices that aren't on silent, can you please ensure that they are on silent? And I don't know why any of you would be looking at particular social media sites of any nature, but if you are, can you please refrain from doing so and try and give some due respect and courtesy to those contributing to the debate? Trevor.
Your point is well made. One of the things that's unique about the Housing Executive is we have a Supporting People programme. And that Supporting People programme is funded to the tune of 73 or 74 million every single year to address many of the complex needs issues that you have actually mentioned there. There is a comprehensive piece of work that's tracked and evaluated every single year in terms of how we can actually address some of those issues. In terms of antisocial behaviour and various other things that you're describing there, each of the housing officers does have a role within their area to look at that, and we have process within that, but Loma can take you through more detail on that.
Yeah, I think that's 100% right. I think what we need to be doing is providing support where it's needed and taking action where it's needed. So they're not the same thing. Someone who needs floating support as Supporting People programme can provide, we should be looking at that. In your particular example here, I know that we have been working closely, you know, with the council, with yourselves, Northern Ireland Fire and Rescue Service, PSNI, We have visited all the residents and asked them to be vigilant because we're aware that this could be an ongoing issue. We've recently given somebody a management transfer to move them on because they are particularly vulnerable. But I think there is some work that we need to do as well, councillor, around the security of the estate there. I know the gate hasn't worked. We've tried that as an option. The oil tanks are particularly vulnerable, so we need to look at that. But I agree with everything that you have said. I think this is a joined-up approach that we need, and we need to keep the focus on it. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Hart.
It's following on, really, from what Charlie and Willie have spoke about, the right types of homes for people. I feel that these housing associations need to be made more aware of the amount of people we have with disabilities coming forward who need ground floor accommodation. It's all right people having a house and getting an extension built on the side of it, but that alienates them from the upper level of the house. So I feel more needs to be done for them, for those people.
We're actually in the middle of a piece of work with our colleagues in NIFA and with the housing associations to identify how many adaptations we actually need to do to accommodate people in some of those unique circumstances. And we're actually looking at how we potentially could share data and information to better distribute and plan for future needs in those areas. So that is something that we have started this year, which hopefully we'll get some traction on quite quickly.
Okay, thank you, Trevor and Loma. Councillors, any additional?
Just one more question here. Just about houses that had double glazing fitted going back a while that didn't get the subsequent ventilation. I think some of the newer phases, there was ventilation put in to stop mould and stuff, and the house becoming actually airtight. Are there any plans to go back to the ones that weren't done to try and ameliorate that fact?
I'm not aware, Councillor McAteer. I'll have to check it out. For you, was it a particular estate that was?
Well, it was just, I think it was on an individual. You know, it was sporadic because anyway they were done sporadically.
Right.
So, but that was just, it was just something I think that may have been missed and discovered subsequently that it wasn't, it had created an airtight house,
yeah,
fair enough.
Yeah.
But then it was getting mouldy, but then I think the newer ones were putting ventilation in, accompanying the double glazing.
Right, okay, we'll check it out for you. Okay.
Okay, thank you. Councillors, anyone further? No one's indicating to me? Okay, on that basis. Sorry, you're going to make a contribution? Thank you, Stephen, and thank you, Trevor and Loma. Have you anything further to add? Are you happy with that? Okay. Thank you very much for taking the time out to come down to us this evening, and safe journey home.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, councillors, so we're going to proceed on to item number 3 on the agenda. Just very briefly before we do, I did forget to take apologies from the outset, so I have an apology recorded from Councillor Carr. And
Councillor Devlin and Councillor Walker.
And Laura Devlin and Christopher Walker. Sorry, who was that third person?
Councillor Walker.
Councillor Walker. I thought you said Christopher Walker. Apologies.
He may have gone green.
And apology from Councillor Hardy also. And Councillor Taylor. Declarations of interest, councillors. I have a declaration declared from Councillor Carr also with respect to item number 3 onwards. Anyone else? No? Okay, so we proceed on then, councillors. So item number 3 is a presentation from Abel Wind on the planning application, proposed wind farm at Hilltown. Councillors, we're going to take 2 presentations over the next 20-minute period. There are 10 minutes assigned to the first presentation from ABO Wind. They have strictly 10 minutes to present to this council, upon which stage we'll pass over to the local community and resident groups, of which there are two. So they similarly have 10 minutes, and it's up to them how they use that 10-minute period to present to the council, whether they want to split it between the two groups or use just one presentation. So I'm going to pass over to ABO Wind to begin their presentation. We'll just have them enter in the chamber. If you just bear with us for a couple of minutes. Sorry, come on ahead.
Chair, could you let me in, please? Chair.
Yes, Councillor Timmy, go ahead.
Yes, just to let you know, Chair, this segment of the meeting was advertised for 7 o'clock, and as far as I'm aware, there's members of the public are due to come to it.
It is open to members of the public, absolutely, and I think we have a considerable amount of them drafting in here at the minute. Now, it's advertised in our agenda. It's scheduled at 7 o'clock, but our meeting time started at 6, and it was on the basis, you know, depending on how long we were going to take the presentation from Housing Executive, we were always due to proceed with the next item on the agenda. So the meeting did start at 6. I'm just listening to the Chief Executive here. In order to facilitate setting up, I think they're going to need 5 minutes or so anyway here, ABO. So if we take an adjournment for 5 minutes, councillors, and we'll come back into the chamber then at 7:05 to start the presentation at that stage. Okay, councillors, thank you. If you can resume your seats, please. Okay, just a quick brief message, councillors, please, some decorum. Just a brief message. You'll be aware that we have a significant crowd gathered in the public gallery this evening for our presentations. I would just remind members of the public gallery that when you're here, the public gallery, really, you're there on a listening brief, and I would ask you to respect the discourse here in the chamber. There should be no contributions from the public gallery this evening, and the contributions will be solely from the two presentations. So we will have an initial presentation from ABO Wind, delivered by Tamsin Fraser, Head of Development. We'll hand over to Tamsin shortly for a 10-minute presentation. I understand she's a few of her colleagues that are going to also make a contribution during that 10-minute period. When they're finished their contribution, I will pass over to Martina Burns and colleagues representing Hilltown Community Association and other objecting groups. And similarly, they will have 10 minutes to make their presentation. Upon the two presentations ending, members of the public gallery can stay in their seats and remain in place, and we'll have a 20-minute question and answer session where Martina and Tamsin will answer questions put to them by the councillors. So I'm going to pass over to Tamsin now for the beginning of her 10-minute presentation. I am going to be quite strict in terms of the time allocated. So we're at 7 o'clock now. Tamsin, I'm going to pass over to you.
Thank you very much. Chair, Vice Chair, Chief Executive, members, thank you very much for having me here tonight to talk to you about the Grigandoo Wind Farm proposal. As Chair has introduced, my name is Tamison Fraser and I'm the Head of Development for Northern Ireland for Abel Wind, and I've been involved with the project right from the beginning. So tonight I just want to take you through a little bit of background on the company, who we are, what we are, the site itself, the context and the layout. I'll give you an overview of the consultation and engagement during the putting together of the planning application. I'll give you an update on where we are with the planning application at the moment. I'll look at the investment and socioeconomics associated with the project, and then I'm going to hand over to a couple of colleagues for a little bit of local perspective on the site. So who are we? By way of background, Abel Wind are a German company by parentage. We have been developing wind farms for 20 years. Started off in Germany, moved out across Europe and into South America, and that's our primary business. We're one of Europe's most experienced wind farm developers, with a staff of more than 300 professionals across the globe. We're currently active in 7 countries, and we've recently hit the 1,000 megawatt mark of projects connected to the grid. Turning to the site itself, and I've included a map in the little folders that have passed out there just so you can sort of get in a bit closer on them. In terms of context, the site is approximately 3 kilometres outside Hilltown. So it's outside the main High Mourns area in the periphery of the AOMB. So there's a larger scale map there which shows Restrevo, Hilltown, Mourne Point for context, and then the zoomed in map many of you will be familiar with, Mullingarriff Road. Looking at the layout, and again I've included a copy of the map inside your folder, the site comprises 12 turbines, associated infrastructure, substation, etc., and access will be taken from the Mullingarriff Road. So why Grigandoo? Why this site? Why was this of particular interest? Well, it's an excellent site based on technical and environmental reasons, and primarily that's in relation to proximity to grid, and there's an excellent wind resource. It's a high capacity site, and what I mean by that is that if you were to take this site and put it elsewhere in Northern Ireland, it wouldn't be as productive. So there's over 29% higher than the UK average of capacity and 22% higher than the Northern Ireland average. So effectively, it's more productive in this area than it would be if it was sited somewhere else. The area is sparsely populated within an undulating landscape, and it's also a very clustered layout. Rather than a string of turbines, it's a clustered layout, and coupled with the very bold topography that there is in the backdrop, it really minimises the visual impact. In terms of consultation and engagement, we really took our time with this planning application, putting it together. Right from the word go, before we started defining the layout, we met with various local key groups, people who have an interest in the area. So we started off with the likes of the council, the tourism development officer. We met with her, got feedback from her on where the key tourism elements of the borough were, and it was concluded that this area really was very limited in terms of tourism impact. Similarly, we met with the Mourns Heritage Trust on several occasions. Given that they are the gatekeeper of the Mourns, we wanted them to be fully involved with the project, fully aware, and we've presented to them and met with them on a number of occasions. We've also been involved with the likes of the Northern Ireland Environment Agency and the Environmental Health Department from the Council, just to name a couple, in terms of shaping our studies, our expert analysis, making sure that they're happy with what we were doing the whole way through. Before we submitted the planning application, we held a full public consultation event at the Downshire Arms Hotel in Hilltown, and we ran that over a period of about 6 hours, so it allowed people who maybe were at work during the day to come home, get their tea and come down and see us. At that event, we had various experts from the various external consultancies that produced our noise reports, our shadow flicker reports, our landscape and visual assessments on hand to speak to local people and answer concerns. And we were really overwhelmed with the amount of people that we had. We had over 140 people through the doors that day, which was really excellent. And that included some of you local councillors, MLAs, and representatives from the likes of the local community group and other associations there. we had a lot of feedback from that event, and again, we took our time. We took over 6 weeks to really analyse the feedback that we'd had before we finalised the application and put it into planning. We eventually put the application in the middle of March, and to date, just to give you an update on where we are, there are 36 consultee requests that have gone out from DOE Planning. And just to explain, it's DOE headquarters that are assessing the application because it's deemed as a regionally significant application. So they're processing it from headquarters in Belfast. To date, we've had 25 responses to the proposal with no objection. And we're working through some further information requests from two consultees who've come back and asked for some more information. We've also had 6 public objections to the application as well. So turning to the investment then associated with the project, I've just put up a snapshot there in terms of the investment that we're looking at. Overall, taking the whole project into account, we're looking at a total investment of £88.24 million, and that's all foreign direct investment. There's no handouts, there's no InvestNI influence, this is all foreign direct investment. Through our parent company in Germany, we have excellent links with financial institutions and banks in Germany, and so it's all foreign direct investment coming in. I've broken it down into total and NI, and just to explain that, there are certain elements of the project that we can't source in Northern Ireland, the likes of the turbines. They aren't manufactured here, so unfortunately we can't source them here. But anything that we can source in Northern Ireland, we will, and I'll explain that in a little bit more detail as we move forward. Looking at the benefits then associated with the project, this project is quite unusual in that it's supporting 17 families directly through the proposal. On a number of sites that we have, there may be, say, one or two landowners who have large scopes of hills, but in this case, there's 17 families. At 39.6 megawatts, the site will produce enough electricity to meet the needs of nearly 30,000 homes. So that's nearly half of all the homes in the Newry Moore and Down Council area. It's also going to reduce carbon dioxide emissions, equivalent to taking nearly 40,000 cars off the road every year. It's going to make a significant contribution towards the mandatory government targets. The target is 40% by 2020. We're currently sitting at 23%, so there's quite a way to go before we get to reach those targets. And it's also going to assist with security of supply. The system operator for Northern Ireland published a report at the end of last year flagging up that there's a real risk of the lights going out in 2016. The Moyle interconnector is working at less than half capacity, and there's 510 megawatts have to be knocked off of conventional gas turbine at Ballylumford. So there is a significant risk to security of supply, but this will all help towards that. Some other things that we're doing in the district, there's a local education initiative, and I just have a couple of pictures there of local schools like St Patrick's and Hilltown, St Patrick's and Rust Island that we're working with. And we've had really good feedback from that. We have a teacher who's going into the local schools and teaching about all elements of renewable energy, and that has been received very well.
Just to remind you, 1 minute left.
Thanks. There's direct and indirect local benefits during the construction phase, so local construction contracts, bed nights, etc. And I've been speaking with Amanda Smith in the Economic Development section of the Council, and we're looking at doing a Meet the Buyer event in the local area to really tee up businesses on opportunities, and I would hope that the Council would support that. There's £9 million worth of rates payable over the 25 years of the project, and there's a community benefit fund of nearly £5 million. One of the things that came out of the event, the public consultation event, was what are local people directly living beside the site getting from this? So we've put in place a local electricity discount scheme to give something back to those who live within a kilometre and a half of the site on a yearly basis. Just to put a quick local perspective on it then before we wrap up, I'm going to hand over to Ian Cumming from 26 Extreme just to say a couple of words, followed by Colin Woods, who's one of the landowners.
Good evening. I'm from 26 Extreme. One of the things that I do is organise off-road events and running events in areas of Outstanding Natural Beauty. And being from the Mourns, the Mourmen Marathon, which Abel Wynn got involved with, is our flagship event. We got their support this year with our event, and the investment in the event allowed us to really promote the event, look at a more strategic marketing plan, and we boosted the event greatly. There was massive numbers in this
Sorry,
year's event.
Apologies, excuse me. I apologise. The 10 minutes are up. I did say from the outset I was going to be strict in applying the 10 minutes, so I'm going to have to stop you there and ask for the next presentation. Thank you. Okay, so we outlined earlier in the evening we are having our second presentation from an amalgamation of community associations who are objecting to the planning application. I know we have representation here from Hilltown Community Association in the form of Martina Burns, but Martina, can you just confirm, is it just yourself making the presentation or is there someone?
No, there's
me. Okay, so there's 10 minutes between the two of you, so are you happy to take 5 minutes each? Absolutely. Yes, certainly, yes. So, Connor, can I ask you to come forward first then? So, I'll give you 1 minute notice, Connor, whenever you're sort of approaching the end of your 5 minute period.
Perfect.
Okay. Proceed there when you're happy to go.
Yep. Okay. Good evening, councillors and chairperson. Thanks very much for the opportunity here to present. So the Mourne AONB Against Wind Farms is a local group with huge concerns about the proposed wind farm in our locality. The group is made up of residents from the greater Hilltown area who are interested in protecting our local environment against investment-driven companies who wish to capitalise for their own financial gain on our greatest natural resource. We are deeply opposed to the creation of a forest of steel in the Mourne and the industrialisation of the stunning, spectacular scenery of our area. In May 2013, the planning board in the Republic refused planning permission for a 5-turbine wind farm in the Cooley Mountains as, and I quote, it would damage the visual immunity of the area and interfere with the character of the landscape. Last year, a wind farm consisting of 16 turbines on the outskirts of Swansea in Wales had plans blocked as it would have degraded and destroyed this beautiful area by industrial development. In August of last year in Tyrone, a plan for 8 turbines at 126.5 metres of height was not passed for reasons which included the impact of the proposal on habitat, the effect of noise on residential property, the visual impact of the wind farm and the significance of the economic and social benefits offered by the wind farm. ABO Wind's application for 12 turbines is 125 metres in height at the tip. This is a size comparison of the wind turbines with a well-known London landmark, which is the London Eye. It is a height of 135 metres, so you can imagine the scale of these turbines. They are huge. We talked about the visual impact of it, and these turbines will be seen from everywhere, from Newcastle, Sleat-Donner, right across. This is the first application for a significant wind farm in the area, Mourne Mountains AOMB. To quote Minister Durkin on wind farms planned for the area of outstanding natural beauty, he quotes, in such extensive landscapes, it may be difficult to accommodate wind turbines without detriment to the region's cultural and natural heritage assets. So move on to our next slide. Destination Mount Mourne Mountains is one of the 9 key tourism destinations in Northern Ireland. And it quotes, the core strengths of the destination are the scenery and landscape associated with the mountains, hills and sea, and easy accessibility to the mountains. Outdoor recreation is at the heart of the future of sustainable development in the Mourne. There is a suggestion in the environmental statement by ABO Wind that wind farms can be a tourist amenity, but there's no evidence there that to back that up. Research in Scotland provides evidence that mountain goers do not want to pursue their activities and spend their money in areas they regard as spoiled by industrial-scale wind farms. They are changing their behaviour and going elsewhere. This wind farm is beside the ASSI, and it adjoins this farm. It is dominated by priority and protected species, upland, heathland, and particular grasslands, and there's a high predicted collision risk for red kites. Impulsive infrasound, which is inaudible intermittent noise, produced by wind turbines is hugely damaging to human health. This can be particularly problematic for infants and the elderly or for children or adults with special needs. Researchers studying wind turbine syndrome recommend a larger buffer zone around wind farms to protect people from any ill effects. The minimum distance the Scottish Government, among others, recommend is that it should be 2 kilometres. The case of Julian and Jane Davis in England, who successfully obtained a $2 million out-of-court settlement from a wind farm operator for noise nuisance.
1 minute remaining, Connor.
And the resultant loss of property value. Let us remember the wind turbine collapse over in Tyrone at the Screga wind farm last year, being a classic example of one of the dangers of living so close to a turbine. The scale and mass of the proposed turbines will be overwhelming on this important landscape in the Mornes. The benefits do not outweigh the significant harm and adverse impacts that the development would have. A, visual impact on the high scenic value of the area. B, impact on AOMB's sense of landscape and the character of the area. C, impact of shadow, flicker and noise. These turbines will be a blight for generations to come, even after the operational life of 25 years is over. We will be left with massive concrete and steel foundations littered across the land, which will never be removed. Approving this application would seriously undermine all current efforts to promote and protect the area. If allowed, the application will set a precedent for wind turbine development in the Mornes area, which is one of the most iconic AOMBs in Northern Ireland, an unspoiled area, which is the reason why it is valued more and more by those who come to enjoy it. Lastly, in closing, the Council needs to protect our beautiful landscape from industrial development, protect our growing tourism industry, which increased by 14% last year, and please do not sacrifice it.
Thank you, Connor. Okay, so I'm going to pass over to Martina then for the remaining 5 minute presentation from Hilltown Community Association.
Hello everybody, and thanks you Chair and the invite for to come here for the 5 minute presentation this evening. My name is Martina Brown and the Hilltown Community Association aims to develop and deliver projects to improve the village and the wider Clonduff Parish. As the representative community group in the village, we have had no success to date in our attempts to meet with the ABO Wind to discuss their application and answer the many questions our residents have. It is beneficial to finally be in the same room as the applicant this evening. Back in January, ABO Wind avoided a public consultation meeting and staged a presentation of information instead. Residents were allowed to look around the display, and that was the first and last time there's been any consultation with the community group. There are huge concerns on the impact of this invasive industrial-scale project on our area and the impact on residents' lives and living so close to a wind farm. Is that the wee red button? There are questions raised on how adequate the environmental statement is. Some of the ongoing representations of planning officials have opinions which conflict the report and state that in some areas the research is skewed. The report also states that the introduction of the wind farm would not irreversibly or permanently alter the character of the landscape and it would be easily returned to the existing condition. And I would like to ask ABO Wind to give an example of this, where it's happened. Our association is involved in varied projects to develop the village and the wider area. Example, walking tourism. One key project is the work in geotourism in the Mourne Cooley Gunyan Geopark. This is work leading to securing UNESCO status for the area. Will the potential of Hilltown be damaged by the industrial wind farm development? Given that our key economic driver in tourism is tourism and the points earlier made about the effect wind energy development has on tourism, we need to safeguard our tourism assets from all inappropriate developments. What will be the long-term sustainable and economically beneficial development for the area? Will it be tourism or will it be the wind farm? There is an extremely low level of public awareness of this proposal. We feel it is rushed, timing of this application coming in at a time of council reform. What is the additional requirement from July of this year if this application was being submitted with the community consultation process? ABO Wind granted a local electrical discount scheme to assist with energy costs to some houses living in close proximity of the site, but the subsidies for wind farms are borne by the domestic tariff on electric. There is talk of a community benefit fund, but no information on how and what way this will be managed, and is it for the Hilltown community? We were told that this will all be sorted when planning is approved. The rates due to the council in Newry Moor and Down Council are approximately £140,000 a year. But let's make a decision not on the rates that would be received by the council or the community investment fund, but solely on the same criteria applied to every other form of planned development in this area and the cost-benefit analysis of the application. This development comes at a high cost to our community and its future. The wind farm company and its investors will make money from the wind that is free, and less than a dozen landowners will benefit. This area is a priceless asset. It should not be sold out. Thank you.
Thank you, Martina. Thank you for keeping that so succinct. Okay, can I invite the parties that were making presentations, Martina and Connor and Tamsin, back up to the front, please? We have mics and seats for you here. to facilitate our question and answer session. Yep. Tamsin, would you like one of your other colleagues to take another seat? This side over here. Just over here, sorry. And Robert Burgess, thank you.
Do you want to sit there?
Sorry, apologies. In case you want to talk. It is like musical chairs. Okay, councillors, so we have a 20-minute period allocated for a question and answer session. And it's open to the floor now if there are any particular questions for either of the two parties. Go ahead, councillor.
The council planning, possibly this is to Abel, the council planning department says that this proposal is contrary to various planning policies. Have you any comment on that? And also another one that I've, you know, read through. NIEA is of the opinion that this is against PPS 2 and PPS 18, and I'm just wondering, have you any comments or any information available to that?
Certainly, thank you. In relation to the policy context in the first instance, there's two sort of parts of that to answer. There's the Banbridge, Newry and Mourne area plan, that's a local plan in the area, and the particular policy of interest there is the special countryside policy area. The site is within that area, and it specifically refers to being permissive of development that is of regional significance. Whenever the application was submitted to DOE, it was designated as an Article 31 project because it is regionally significant and therefore complies with the Banbridge, Newry and Mourne area plan in terms of that policy. In relation to PPS 18, that's the planning policy for renewable energy, that is the policy by which all renewable energy is assessed against. So there's three really key elements of that. It is permissive, there's a presumption in favour of renewable energy development, subject to weighing up the social, the economic and the environmental benefits of the project. So all three of those have to be taken into account. Obviously, the environmental statement and the various consultees, expert consultees, go through the environmental reports, and I have sort of covered that earlier. Included within that is the DRD economics branch, who've concluded that there is a net economic benefit from the project. So it's really to the planners then to do that balancing act of the three elements of the policy. Turning to the NIEA response then, NIEA was one of the consultees that we have been engaging with from the very beginning of the planning application. They have returned a response to us which noted comment in relation to the range and quality of the reports that we had submitted and commended us on those. They also made reference to the fact that at this moment in time they don't have an opinion one way or another because they need some further information. So we're working through that with them at the moment to get the further information to assist them in finalising their comments on that.
Thank you, Tamsin. Thank you, Councillor Fitzpatrick. Councillor Enright.
Thanks, Chairperson. I have three questions for three different people. Is that all right?
Go ahead, that's fine.
All right. Well, the first question is basically for all the submissions. I was surprised that none of them mentioned the Mourne's National Park report, which was led by a man from this area called Harvey Becker, which actually recommended that area of the Mourne's as being suitable for renewable energy and wind farms. And I was surprised that neither the opponents nor the proponents noted the content of the National Park report. So I'm just wondering, was that an error or did they just not notice? Second question is for the ABO. Could you just clarify the how the community benefit of what looks like just short of 200,000 a year is going to be delivered to the community? And second of all, could you confirm that my estimates of the rates value per annum of your project of being £360,000 to £400,000 per annum is accurate? And thirdly, just a question for the Chief Executive. At our joint meeting with Donegal County Council Chief Executive, I think he was he? In Newry?
Yeah.
I think he said that Donegal County Council probably would have gone bust were it not for the impact on rates coming in from wind farms in Donegal County Council. and wind farms in that area have made an enormous contribution to the rateable value of Donegal and basically kept Donegal County Council in business. That was a question.
Was that a question or a comment? Are you looking for a comment from the Chief Executive? Okay. Okay, I think I'll pass firstly to Martina and the group if you want to reply to the first question, or the second question, sorry, and then I'll pass over to Tamsin and then on to Liam. Go ahead, Martina.
Okay, Councillor Enright, thank you for the question. Given the time frame that we had this evening, it was a quick flavour of both presentations, and we're fully aware of that report that it actually outlined that area for the National Park. It was just a case of trying to get our many points in the 5 minutes we had. Thank you.
Okay, Tamsin, would you like to pick up on the points then?
Yes, thank you. Yes, in relation to the Mourne's National Park report, again, we are aware of that as well. I hadn't touched on that because it's not a current designation, and I wanted to focus on the current designations that are in hand, and that's part and parcel of the reason that we spent a bit of time working with the Mourne's Heritage Trust to ensure that they were fully aware of the scheme, and they influenced some of the landscape and visual montages. They had asked for more and suggested more. So we tried to focus really on the current policy in relation to that. Turning to the community fund, there's a variety of ways that can be delivered. There's no set way, there's nothing set in place at this moment in time. And as I think Martina had touched on, it's something that normally we put in place later on. We, in the past, have looked at various ways of doing that. There can be a committee set up in the local area to receive applications and to disseminate the funds from there, or the likes of the Community Foundation can be used to be an impartial partner to deliver those funds. In relation to the community fund in this area, we've actually already been approached by a couple of groups who were discussing the matter with and looking to make a discretionary agreement with them that, you know, we can start to commit some of that. And certainly if the community group had anything of particular interest, we'd be more than happy to hear from them. And we have put that to them previously. In relation to the rates, yes, you're correct. Those are the figures that we're looking at in terms of the rates. So approximately 40% of that will go to the Exchequer and 60% to the local council.
Thank you, Tamsin. And Liam, can you pick up on the third point?
Councillor Enright is probably more clued into that presentation than me on that. I don't know, but I can follow up with an email to Seamus Needy, which can feed through to the planning committee, hopefully before the meeting Wednesday. But I know that there would have been major rates income, but how big the impact was, I'm not sure.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Enright, or sorry, apologies.
Councillor.
No, Councillor Riley.
Yeah, thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thanks to the groups for giving their presentations. I'm opposed to wind power because, you know, it's not wind farming, it's farming subsidy, and if the subsidies were not being made available, these things would not be viable, and that to me is nonsensical. You know, you talk about the lights going out in 2016. One of the reasons why lights may go out in 2016 is because of the over-reliance of wind power that we already have. You know, it's completely absurd to spend millions of pounds on developing wind turbines while having spinning reserves sitting in conventionally powered electricity generating plants. So there's no saving to the environment. In real terms, in terms of the National Park Report, that was wholesale rejected by the Mourne's community. It was never adopted. It was seen as flawed, and I'm surprised that it's been mentioned here tonight. You know, if there are a couple of groups who have already made preliminary investigations into obtaining finance, I think it's very important that we know exactly who they are now. We need to know who they are now. If people are lobbying for finance, that can taint opinion. It can set things against people against each other, and I don't like that type of activity, even before there's a planning application approved. So I think we need to know who these groups are who are looking money. Donegal Council, the chief executive of the council was very, very clear that they would not allow these in areas where they would have a detrimental effect on tourism. Now, he said that, and I actually asked him, could I get a copy of his policy, which he did indicate he would send down. Now, he hasn't sent it yet, but the council policy, so I think it's very important that we get that. One of my biggest concerns about these wind turbines is the detrimental effect that it has on our most vulnerable citizens, the people who subsidise these rates. This rate's not coming from the exchequer. These subsidies aren't coming from the exchequer. These subsidies are coming from the ordinary Joe 5-8 on the street, the old lady who's paying her electricity bill and green taxes. The local businesses that are being completely hammered by high rateable valuations, who are losing their business discounts next year, will get additional green energy bills or green energy taxes imposed on their electricity bills to pay for these things. It's damaging to the community, it's damaging to the environment, it's damaging to business development. The other issue I would like, and I would like some of the community groups to point this out, there's a huge concern within people in the area, not just directly beside these, but for a good radius out from them, that property values will be devalued, as we've seen in England, Scotland and Wales and the Republic. Houses that were valued previously at maybe £200,000 or £300,000 just cannot be sold because nobody wants to live beside these monstrosities. So, Chairman, that's my aspect on it. I'm very much opposed to it, and I definitely have not heard anything here tonight to change my mind. Thank you.
Have you any specific questions, Councillor?
Yes, property values. I want to know how they will be affected by this.
Okay.
Property values in local houses. Will the people get compensation? If the rate, if their rateable, you know, we're talking about rates, Madam Chair, if there's rateable valuation on that house and those houses become valued at a third of their present rateable valuation, will they be compensated? I think that's a reasonable question.
Tamsin, I'll let you pick up on that in just a moment. I think Martina wanted to come in on some of the comments that the Councillor had made.
Thanks, Chair. Sorry, Councillor Riley, it was just on the points for the Community Investment Fund. It would be nice excuse me, to know the information, what projects are being funded. I know there's one particular project and we were told that it was separate from the Community Investment Fund and it is possibly being pursued at this stage. Our question is, there's a Community Investment Fund, 198,000. Hilltown Community Association don't know, is this going to Hilltown? How is it going to be operated? As Tamsin's answered, it's going to be organised after the planning application has been approved. I don't know if that's a fair situation.
Connor, you'd like to comment also?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Just to pick up Councillor Riley's question there about property value, the case that I informed the committee here of was about Julian and Jane Davis in England, who successfully won the £2 million compensation payout due to noise and the loss of property value. I can send that on to you, Councillor, if you like that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Connor. Okay, Tamsin, if you'd like to pick up some of those points.
Yes, thank you very much. Councillor Riley, maybe to come to you first of all in relation to property values. The RICS have recently published an article to say that they've peer reviewed a number of articles that have been prepared in relation to property values, and they don't find any conclusive evidence to suggest that there is an impact on property values. Now, I appreciate Mr. McGreevy has acknowledged a court case in England as well, and I think I'm familiar with the Davis case, and it's actually quite a specific issue in relation to noise, and it's quite different. It's not strictly in relation to property value, so I think that's slightly misleading. But as I say, RICS have come out and they have said that there's no conclusive evidence in relation to that. I just wanted to pick up on one other point as well in relation to subsidies, because I think that's a very important point in relation to this project. A number of you may be aware of recent articles in the press in relation to the ROCs, the Renewables Obligation Certificates, coming to an end in the UK. GB will see that come to an end in 2016. In Northern Ireland, it's possibly 2016-2017. It hasn't been decided as yet. By the time this project is built, there will not be any subsidies. So this project, subject to a satisfactory planning approval and a grid connection, will not have any subsidies. There will be no subsidy support in that, so there will be no impact on the consumer in relation to this project.
Thank you, Tamsin. Councillor Hannah.
Chair, I have two questions here. So I have one for Abu and one for the community group. Firstly, are there any other areas in Northern Ireland where large wind farms are built in areas of outstanding national or outstanding national beauty or designated areas such as that. I, to be quite honest, I'm surprised at the size of these turbines. Are 125 metres high, substantial as it is. And the second question is directed at the community group. Have you any evidence of wind farm developments having an adverse effect on tourism? We need a bit more information on that. You haven't really given us very much on that yet, so you haven't. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Tamsin, if you'd like to pick up on the first point.
Thank you, Councillor. Yes, there are other large-scale wind farm developments in AOMBs in Northern Ireland, primarily County Derry, and there are a few in Tyrone as well, so it's not unusual. It's something which has happened previously. In relation to the size of the wind turbines, just to come back on that, the structures are 125 metres to the tip height, and we appreciate that, yes, they are tall structures, but they need to get up to a certain height to catch the wind. I would qualify that a wind farm, unlike any other type of development, has a finite lifetime. It's only operational for 25 years. So if you get a planning permission, the planning permission has an end date on it, at which time you must stop operation and you take away all above-ground structures of the wind farm, effectively leaving behind the site as it was before you arrived. I think Mr. McGreevy or Ms. Byrne noted in their presentation that there would be a variety of above-ground structures left. We physically can't do that as part of our planning application. Normally, landowners tend to like actually having the laneways left because it's good facilities for getting onto the hill and feeding stock and accessing, but there won't be any above-ground structures left behind us.
Thank you. Martina, if I can pass over to you then to pick up on Connor. Go ahead, Connor.
Yeah, thanks, Councillor, for the question, sir. In Tyrone last year, there was an application for 8 turbines at 126.5 metres of hub height. It was refused. Planning permission due to the nature of what we're opposing this application on, the impact it would have on the visual area, it's near the AOMB over there. So we can pass you on that information if you like that. And then in Scotland, there's research there that wind farms are putting tourists off from going near these areas now. So we can also pass on that research for you too, if you like.
Okay, well, I think, Connor, you've indicated they're happy to do that, so that can be facilitated. Very briefly, Tamsin.
Sorry, just to pick up on the point on tourism as well, that's something which we've been very conscious of from the beginning of the application, hence why speaking to the Moray and Heritage Trust and the tourism officers within the council. We also commissioned a full tourism impact assessment to ensure that we were taking everything into account, and that has been submitted as part of the application and is being assessed as part of the environmental statement. So it's something which we've really built in as part of the application. Within the little pack that we circulated, I put in a selection of photo montages. Now, there was around about 40 in total, but I've just put a few in there to give you a flavour of key views. You see from the likes of Donard, we're 15 kilometres away, and Donard, you're looking straight down on the turbines. There's very minimal visual impact in relation to that, but there is a full suite submitted as part of the application.
Thank you, Tamsin. Councillor Burns.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks for both presentations. I suppose, first of all, I think it's important to be noted for those who aren't aware that this is, won't be ultimately a council decision, that we're just giving our opinion tonight. But I have a few points that I'd like to explore a little further. The first being the community fund. And like Councillor O'Reilly, I do share concerns about who may benefit from this fund and how and who controls this fund and how that money would be distributed into the community and how we make sure that the people that are impacted are those that ultimately benefit. I suppose if my figures are correct, the community fund works out at about $200,000 a year. Now, you mentioned there was 17 families involved in that. Is that $200,000 a year minus that 17, whatever you're paying for the families? And if so, can you give us a breakdown of what actually will go into the community for community projects? Because at $200,000 a year on 12 turbines, And bear in mind, these are 100 metre plus turbines. You're talking 17k per turbine per year. It doesn't strike me as an awful amount of money, you know, in regards to turning that into community facilities. So if you could just elaborate a little bit on that and let us know a bit more. The other thing, any experience I've had with turbines before, there's always an issue in upgrading primary lines to the primary substation. I presume that sort of cabling work would all have to be done. And I want to ask you, is there any opportunity there to look at fibre cabinets and putting fibre cable in along with that? So then that we have a big problem in this area with broadband, that if the place was being interrupted in such a way that we could at least provide some sort of rural broadband service as well. And sort of on that point, it was mentioned in the presentation, and I apologise, I can't remember which one of the presentations it was mentioned in, but that we haven't seen or heard of any examples of wind turbines at the end of their life cycle being dismantled and the return of the land back to its natural heritage. So if we have a 25-year cycle, can you give us some example of where that's happened before, and it's not just an application to keep these up or to upgrade them? And on that point, the actual basis, the concrete basis, is there any plans for any biodiversity projects to mitigate for these bases? Anything you're going to do to enhance the countryside to sort of make up for the large pieces of concrete and the distribution of wildlife? And lastly, I think from my own point of view, we're doing a lot of work at the minute in council in regards to community consultation and community engagement. And it was very concerning for us to hear a group come in here who is a community group and represents a number of people saying that they've been unable to contact you. Could we have some details of what consultations went on and possibly what consultation will go on the back of that piece of information? Because obviously there's a lack of satisfaction from the community, and we need some reassurance that you will go out again, you will talk to the people and register their concerns. So hope that's everything.
Thank you, Councillor Tamsin. Most of those were directed at yourself, if you want to pick them up.
Thank you. I'll just sort of run through those in order that you had asked the questions. First of all, in relation to the community fund, yes, this is an entirely separate fund. It's an entirely separate pot of money that is set aside every year. So it's the $195,000 that is set aside every year, and that's available separate to the 17 families. It's a totally distinct fund. The level of the community fund has very much been dictated to us by ministers in Northern Ireland. The sort of approximate level of contributions from developers range from £1,000 to £5,000 per megawatt. And Minister Atwood, when he was in power, and Minister Foster, when she was Deputy Minister, wrote to our industry group and said, look, you should really be operating at the upper end of this. So ABO Wind has stepped up to the mark, and we are operating at the upper end of the community fund levy. In relation to how that's disseminated, as I say, there are various ways of doing that, and really I'd be very keen to hear from local members such as yourselves as to how you think that might work best in this local area. I know that the council is very committed to contributing funds to community and voluntary groups, so I see this as a really good opportunity that we could match fund through community funds. So any feedback or any assistance from yourselves in relation to how that could be disseminated would be very useful from our point of view, to make sure that the local people are benefiting from it as much as possible. In relation to NIE, and the grid connection, we have had a feasibility study done, and they have advised us that the likely connection would be to the Newry 110 kV station there at Monk Hill Road. In relation to broadband, that's actually something which we're exploring at the moment to see if there is a possibility for us to upgrade that for the local area. As we find in a lot of the areas that we work, broadband is poor or non-existent. So there are fibre optics through the site, and we're looking to see if we can try and upgrade that for the local area at the minute. There are issues with topography and range, but it's something which we're considering at the moment. In relation to biodiversity and wildlife then, yes, we have had a full assessment done by external expert consultants in relation to ornithology, flora and fauna. So built into our application is a full habitat management programme. So that looks at providing flora and fauna benefits in the local area. and restoring areas outside the immediate footprint of the project itself. In relation to community engagement, finally then, I'm disappointed to note that there have been comments in relation to us not engaging with the community. There has been two meetings arranged with the local community group, and unfortunately those have been cancelled at the last minute. But I'm very pleased to say that we do now have a meeting arranged for the 22nd of October, and we're looking forward to engaging with the Hilltown community group. In relation to the Mourns AONB group, who are also Mr McGreevy was representing, this is actually the first that I've heard of the group this evening. So we haven't had any engagement with them because we didn't know they existed, but we'd be more than happy to set up a meeting with them to have conversations and go through all this at any time. There's no problem with that.
Okay, thank you, Tamsin. Councillor Quinn.
Thank you, Chair. My question is for the goal to all of the groups. There was great pains made about the removal of structures after 25 years, about the above ground structures. What about the below ground structures? They're not going to be removed, and if not, what is going to be their long term impact on environment and wildlife?
Thompson, go ahead.
As part of our planning application, not only do we have to consider the construction impact and the operational phase impact, we also have to consider what's called the decommissioning impact. So that's when we get to the end of the 25-year lifetime, what happens, what we do. So that's all covered in detail in our environmental statement, and all the expert consultees who review that will go through and assess the impact in relation to that. As I say, generally we find the likes of the laneways, the farmers are very keen to see those left because it improves access and improves sort of feeding arrangements on the hills, so generally that's received very well. But in relation to the environmental impact, that's all assessed within an environmental statement, and the various expert consultees come back on that.
Okay, thank you, Tamsin. Councillor Tinley.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Tamsin.
Sorry, Councillor Quinn. Excuse me, Councillor Quinn,
Martina.
And the chairperson comments
Connor
through the chair.
And Tamsin.
Can I just, before you proceed, Councillor Tinley, if you're looking to make a contribution, your light should be on to indicate such, and you did turn your light off. You didn't notify me that you were looking back in. I'm happy to, for you to make a quick comment, but as you know, comments are to be made through the chair.
Thank you, and apologies if I didn't answer your question. The process for decommissioning requires full habitat management to be put in place whenever we leave the site. So the below ground structures generally, as a rule, aren't removed. They are soiled over, seeded over, and full habitat management is taken into account. As I say, the environmental consultants have prepared their analysis in relation to that, and the expert consultees come back and comment on the impacts in relation to that. But there is a full habitat management scheme that will be put in place, so there wouldn't be any impact on watercourses, on flora, on fauna as an ongoing result.
Thank you, Tamsin. Councillor Tinley.
Thank you, Chair. Question for Tamsin. The electricity is generated, Tamsin, from these proposed turbines. Did I pick you up right that it'll actually be entering the grid, hopefully in the Monk's Hill area of Newry?
Yes, we have approached Northern Ireland Electricity and had a feasibility study done from them. So they have suggested to us that we will connect into the 110 kV station at Monk's Hill Road. Now, how we'll get there is up to NIE. They will dictate to us exactly the route, etc. But that will happen if there's a planning permission achieved and we submit a grid application. They will dictate to us how we get there. But that's what they've indicated, that's where the capacity is, and that's where we'll connect.
Well, with similar schemes, Tamsin, in your experience, would the connection from point A to point B be overhead or underground? And if it is overhead, is it a standard wooden pole with high voltage cables, or are we talking about something much larger?
Thank you. Certainly it would be our preference that it's all underground cables, because that has a minimal impact, obviously. Now, it's not within our gift to say if it's underground. NIE will dictate that to us. If it's overground or underground, as I say, our preference would be underground. But yes, if it is overground, it would be a standard wooden pole. It's not, there's not going to be any pylons or anything like that. But as I say, it's not within our gift to give. NIE will dictate that to us.
And that being the case then, there's the possibility that ground will be vested if landowners don't wish to give it up with upright.
My understanding is that NIE, and certainly in our experience in other projects, will try to stick to the public road as much as possible to sort of minimise impact. I'm not sure how their negotiations are done directly with landowners. That would be something between NIE and the landowners directly. So I wouldn't really be in a position to comment on that, unfortunately.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Tinley. Martina, you wanted to come in on that point specifically, and I think two others raised previously. Very quickly, yeah.
Thanks, Chair. Just on the comment by Councillor Burns, apart from the walk-around display in January, IBO has failed to agree to meet with the Community Association. We actually engaged with our MP, Margaret Ritchie, in the first week of July to explain the concerns we have trying to get a meeting with IBO Wind. And through Mark Ritchie's office, there's been two meetings that have been talked about that fell through. And that the next date the Community Association is allowed to meet with ABO Wind is the 22nd of October. Given that the meeting here is this evening, I feel there's maybe a few games being played here. With Councillor Quinn's question about the below ground structures, I'm not clear on this, but ABO Wind is, Ireland is a subsidy of the parent group, and I'm just concerned bringing this question up. Given it's a subsidy, a subsidiary of the parent group, given that after 25 years, can that subsidiary fold up and therefore there's no money to actually clear the overground structures, never mind the underground structures of an ABO, of the actual the project? And The other question about that Councillor Burns brought up about the Community Investment Fund, I would like to ask Thomson, how many Community Investment Funds are there? Because there's other projects being talked about. I would like her to identify these projects and say what funds are actually being going, what funds are going to different projects, and how many funds are there regarding the community? And there has been no, and if you understand and listen to the answers here, there's no clear information as to the Community Investment Fund. Is Hiddletown the community? Is South Down the community? Is Burren, Mayor Bridge, Warren Point, Kilkee, Rathfarnham the community? There's no answers as to where this Community Investment Fund is going to be invested. What structures will it take? Who will run it? And how will it actually be invested?
Tamsin, the issue around the community investment and how that's going to take effect has come up quite significantly from a lot of contributions. So if you want to very briefly come back on that, and then I'm going to pass over to Councillor Ennis.
Certainly. Thank you, Chair. Yes, just to come back on the community fund, there is one single community fund which is set aside every year, as I mentioned earlier. It's £195,000 in the pot. That's available every year for the 25-year lifetime of the project. As I've mentioned earlier, we have been approached by a couple of groups. There's nothing set in stone at the moment. As and when there is something set in stone, I'd be more than happy to share that. But at this moment in time, there's only discussions going on. As I've mentioned earlier, we're meeting with the community group now on the 22nd of October, and we're welcome to hear the community group's ideas and suggestions on projects for the local area. In terms of scope, again, really, we're looking for feedback from the local area in terms of how far that goes out. We certainly want to see the immediate Hiddletown area benefiting mostly from that fund as far as possible. And that's part of the reason why we introduced the local electricity discount scheme. And we've really tailored that to 1.5 kilometres from the outer extreme of the site, around the site from each turbine, to ensure that immediate local area is benefiting from it. But again, I mean, we're happy to take suggestions on local projects, because it's the local people and local councillors who know best what should benefit from the project. just to touch quickly on the financial commitment as well. Indeed, ABO Wind NI is a subsidiary of our parent company, ABO Wind AG, but there's full financial commitment behind the project, and for the lifetime of the project. The project couldn't be financed if there was no commitment behind that, so there would be no issue in that respect.
Thank you, Tamsin. Councillor Ennis.
Thank you, Chair. Tamsin, you actually touched on my question in your comments there at the end. It was in regards to the 1.5 kilometre scope for the electricity discount. Just my question was, how was that determined, and is there room for manoeuvre to take in more of the wider Hilltown community?
Thank you. Yes, the local electricity discount scheme was something that came out of the public consultation event. There was a number of ABO employees at the public consultation event, as well as expert consultants. And as I noted in the presentation, we went away from that with an awful lot of feedback. And the thing that kept on recurring to us was the local people saying, well, if I'm not in a community group, or I'm not in the local sports club, or I'm not in the local association, what am I getting out of it? I'm living directly beside the site. So we took a diameter of 1.5 kilometres from the outer extremity of each turbine on the site. And really that's sort of 10 rotodiameters plus 10% we thought would be a fair scope in relation to that. We then wrote to every household within that area. There was, off the top of my head, I think it was about 95 homes within that area, and proposed a local electricity discount scheme to those people. It's a voluntary scheme, and we've had excellent uptake. It offers £500 per year to the homeowner to help with energy costs. The reason why it was £500, we looked at the average electricity bill across the UK, and it's coming in around £1,000. So we tried to pitch it at about 50% of the average bill, and we've had excellent uptake so far, as I say, in relation to that. We've had over 50 people come back in relation to that. But that was something that we wanted to do to really localise the benefit and to ensure that the immediate properties living closest to the site would benefit from the project. So that's how we'd arrived at that figure.
Okay, thank you, Tamsin. And I think, Bertina, you wanted to make a quick comment.
Just a quick comment. Thanks, Councillor Ennis. One of the actual electoral scheme was one of the questions we were looking to talk with ABO Wind about, just what you've talked about. The whole scheme wasn't made public within the residents in Hilltown. The letters were addressed to key households in the area, and residents that live right beside the wind farm haven't been given this scheme. So it wasn't like electoral register, and so many people in a postcode got this offer of £500, and an excellent uptake is, I think, 50 households. I think there was over 90 letters sent, and 45 residents, as far as I'm aware, refused to accept the £500 payout and buy-in of their objection.
Thank you, Martina. Councillor McAteer.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Can I ask Asmin and Martina and Connor, could the three particular entities give me an illustration of somewhere similar in Europe, equivalent, an AONB or an equivalent, where something similar was carried out, a scheme was carried out, and whether there are examples of positive outcomes or positive experiences and or negative experiences, or indeed both. I'd maybe illustrate those.
Tamsin?
Maybe if I could start, I suppose, in relation to the local Northern Ireland context in the first instance. As I touched on earlier, there are a number of wind farms in areas of outstanding natural beauty. If we take one example of the Alta Hullion wind farm in County Derry, it actually is promoted as a tourism attraction on the council website and has a brown tourist sign in relation to that. That was one of the earliest projects to go up. As I noted earlier, we are operational in 7 countries across the globe, and particularly in Germany, we find that the tourism aspect of the wind farms is really excellent. We've had great success working with local tourism bodies and local community groups in working with the wind farm, putting in place walks, etc., through the wind farm. So it's a very, very positive aspect in relation to that across the globe.
Thank you. Martina?
Thank you, Chair. Just to Councillor McAteer. Unfortunately, I can't say I know anything of something similar in Europe where there's positive outcomes for a wind farm in the AONB area. I would like to be able to get that information if I can and actually be able to digest it ourselves. But I just wanted to bring back to an earlier point where the environmental statement is actually supporting this whole application. If you look with the current correspondence that's going on, there's huge opinions to object to different points in the environmental statement, and that it isn't clear to say that an AONB doesn't affect tourism and it actually becomes a tourism asset to an area. And I would just like to just bear that in mind, that there is opinions from different agencies as well as residents, and not just residents of Hilltown, that the research the environmental statement is based on is actually skewed.
Connor, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Chair. Councillor McAteer, as a group, whenever we formed, we've been trying now to get to a wind farm somewhere across Ireland. We advertised and we met up in Hilltown. There's now a panel of us there, so we are hoping to get to a wind turbine to hear more local views. I personally have been to some across Europe, one in particular in Scotland, outside Glasgow, where there actually is community funding things set up. However, that has been quite divisive across the community up there. But we can try and get more information to you as we move forward.
Tamsin, if you'd like to respond.
Yes, certainly. Apologies, I didn't answer that specifically. Taking Germany as being our largest market in the company, they have various different designations. They're not called an area of outstanding natural beauty per se, but it's a similar sort of designation in the likes of the Bavarian region, which is a highly scenic area, very popular with walkers, with skiers, etc. And there's a number of wind farms and much larger wind farms than we would be looking at on the island of Ireland. So it's something that has been received very positively, and I certainly after the meeting could pull together a few examples for you and forward those across. That would be no problem at all.
Thank you. Councillor Merlin.
Go ahead. Sure. ABO Wind there. Just, you've already said that the NIE connection isn't in your control. Can you mind just letting us know why the application boundary then runs to the Newry side of Warren Point?
Certainly, thank you. On the map that I've provided in your pack, included on that is the red line application boundary. And the reason that extends to Warren Point is that takes into account our haul route for where the turbines would most likely be delivered into would be the harbour there at Warren Point. So that takes into account how we would get them up to the site and any road improvements that would be required. Now, road improvements here are actually very minimal. We would need to remove some traffic furniture, etc., signs and whatever, and replace those. There's a little bit of work to be done as we get closer to the site, but that red line just designates the haul route as we get the turbine components up to the site.
Okay, thank you. Councillors, I can't see any other councillors indicating further questions, so I think that brings this part of the meeting to a conclusion. Connor, Martina, Tamsin, yourself, just to thank you for coming out this evening, for making the presentations, for answering so succinctly and keeping everything running efficiently. Thank you once again. And we're going to proceed on to our next item on the agenda. It's also worth noting, particularly to the group here beside me and to the members of the public gallery, that obviously this is a decision that won't come to council. It is a decision that will be made by the minister, and we, as such, the council are consultees in that process. So we're here on that basis tonight to discuss the issue and make a recommendation as per our consultation response. So it's worth noting, particularly to members of the public gallery. So thank you once again, and safe journey home. So we're proceeding on to item number 6 then, the report from Council's Planning Department. Can I ask Anthony Mackay and Jackie McParland to come forward, please? And we're going to have their presentation. And thank you also to the members of the public, just as you're leaving. Okay, Jackie, do you want to proceed then?
With your report? I'll keep this maybe a wee bit on the brief side, since I've maybe heard quite enough tonight. The application is for 12 turbines, which have a hub height of 75 metres and a rotor diameter of 50 metres, 100 metres, bringing up the total height of 125 metres. The application was accompanied by an environmental statement that's been processed by the DOE, as it involves a major energy generating station which exceeds the capacity of 30 megawatts and therefore meets the criteria for a major development as prescribed by the purpose of Article 26.1 of the Planning Act. In terms of consultation responses, most have come back satisfactory, with the exception of NIEA, landscape architects, and the Natural Heritage and Natural Environmental Division. NIEA landscape architects branch have returned their consultation, stating that they believe the development will have a significant adverse effect on the landscape character of the Mourne's AONB by reason of number, scale, size, and siting of the turbines, and would be contrary to plan policies RE1, NH6 and TSM8. Natural Environment Division has said that they've considered the information to date and are of the opinion that in the absence of further environmental information to fully assess the likely impact on natural heritage issues, that the proposal would be contrary to PPS 2 and PPS 18 in that it may impact on the priority and protected species of red kites and the upland heathland priority habitat, which are both protected under EU designations. The site is located within the Mourne's AONB, and there is a special countryside area zoning within the Banbridge Nuria Mourne area plan. I would just like to correct something that was said earlier on, in that because the reason why the application has been dealt with by DOE is because it meets the major threshold on the development management regulations and not because it is seen as regionally significant. So it would be our opinion that the first criteria of the DOU 1 policy of the area plan hasn't been met, and therefore it should automatically be contrary to the area plan policy. In relation to the actual proposal, it's our opinion that the proposal would have an adverse and detrimental impact on the character setting of the AONB and the countryside policy area through the scale, size, setting and the number of turbines within the development. Furthermore, the contrary to COU, policy COU 1 of the Plan Strategy and Framework document of the Nuria Mourne Banbridge Area Plan, and the proposal would also be contrary to RE1 of Plan Policy Statement 18, Renewable Energy, in that the it would have an unacceptable impact on the visual amenity and landscape character of the immediate and wider area, and also be contrary to plan policy statement 2, natural heritage, the policy NH6, which has criteria for assessing applications within the area of outstanding natural beauty. The Mourne's mountain range represents a significant economic natural heritage asset for the region and the local tourism sector. Within the immediate area, there are several walks promoted by Walk NI and there are, of course, mountaineering walks, which are very well used along Slieve Croob and Slieve Donard. And the applicant has made a case through the environmental statement of how a wind farm can represent the tourist attraction by quoting the Mintel report. The Northern Irish Tourist Board have returned a consultation to DOE questioning the actual findings of the report and saying that it is largely inconclusive in relation to its findings. Tourism NI have also stated that there is limited potential for leveraging future wind farms as tourist amenities and that they do not promote wind farms as tourist attractions. They've also highlighted that half the respondents of the Mintel report failed to indicate that they would be happy to visit an area with a wind farm, and given the information supplied by the applicant and the consultation response from Tourism NI, there would be concern of a possible detrimental impact the proposal will have on the tourist industry within the Newry, Mourne and Down area, and indeed at regional level, and therefore we would find the proposal contrary to TSN 8 of Plan Policy Statement 16, Tourism. In relation to the other concerns that, in relation to the further environmental information that the applicant may be talking to NIEA about, as it stands at the minute, in terms of when we're giving this presentation, it's also contrary to NH2 and NH5 of PPS2 in terms of the protected upland heath and the protected species.
Okay. Thank you, Jackie. Go ahead, Councillor.
Can I make a proposal that the Council indicates no support for this application and a recorded vote, please, if there's a seconder? Thank you.
I think we need to have a bit of a debate first, Chairperson.
Yeah. We have allocated time for discussion, so if anyone has any particular feedback.
Can I just get clarification from the Council's legal advisor? There's 6 members of the Planning Committee currently in the room as to what our position is before this debate kicks off.
Chairman, the position is, and I'll have Patrick come in on it, but the position is that members, you know, that in regards, you've got to think of your role in terms of Planning Committee in terms of taking views on these proposals. This proposal is not within your gift, so you can ask questions, you can seek clarification. What you can't do is have a blanket view on regards to wind farms and wind farm development. So any discussion or any contribution you need to make is with that open mind. Patrick, anything you want to add to that?
Go ahead. Okay,
sure. No, I never really got the answer. I'm talking about specifically in relation to a vote.
Well, like I outlined earlier, we aren't voting on this matter. This is a decision that will be taken by the manager.
I'll maybe answer that, Chairman, if you like.
Henry is just calling for a vote, Chair.
Yeah, we're Chairman, again, it's members, you know, members need to make a decision in terms of whether they, again, it's back in your own position. If you take a vote on this here and you clarify that vote in regard to this application, it depends where you're taking a vote for. If you're taking a vote to say to reject the application, for what reason you're rejecting the application, is it because specifically of that, because of the location, is it specifically because of the issues you've got? But in some instances, maybe better that you abstain from that.
I was proposing that the council reject or propose us no support for the application based on the officer's report.
We're here, the purpose of this meeting here tonight is for us to come to some sort of agreement on what the council's formal consultation response would be. So we're not here to vote, we're not here to make proposals as such, we're just here to form an opinion on what the preferred option would be, whether to support or go against, or what recommendations we would be putting before the department for consideration. But I understand that even at that, we will only make that proposal here tonight, and then it would have to go before the planning committee.
Who would actually be taking forward? So you can get involved in it. But sorry, it goes for the recommendation of the council goes before the planning committee, because the planning committee will take a position in terms of where it sees. So members of the planning committee may want to participate, but again, they need to be conscious in terms of participate that they're taking an open position onto it. So it's regard to that specific application. It's not regard to about wind farms or wind turbines or renewable energy, or you're taking a predetermined view on that there. But again, members can make their own decision on that. Well, Chairman, members can make a contribution in terms of, you know, there's also a contribution in terms of the reason for hearing this presentation from ABO, for the community organisation. They've raised a number of particular areas. You could actually pick up some of them particular areas and say, listen, in terms of responding, there's issues over community contribution, there's issues that you have concerns, there's issues over in terms of potential in terms of tourism, in terms of lack of consultation with the community, in terms of you feel that more consultation should have been done with the community on that basis. So there's a number of areas in that you may want to consider. Jackie's perspective is from the perspective of, and let Jackie clarify that, but her perspective is from a position from a professional planner who's looking at it as a planning officer who would be looking at the application. If she was in headquarters looking at the application, these are the issues that she'd be considered. However, as members of the planning committee will know, there's much wider context to this here, and you know, things that got there that were discussed earlier on are things that members might want to consider and build into any report.
Councillor McAteer?
Yeah, just questions just to Jackie and Anthony. It's just about the LCA 72 Steve Roosley. That document, you know, it might have been helpful maybe just to have that. A lot of it only new is really, I think, is up today, wasn't it? And, you know, it's just hard to take a balanced, is there information for us to take a proper in-depth assessment of this document in the short time we're here. There's terminology here, as I say, documents refer to certain I never heard tell of, and I'm on the planning committee. Not that that makes probably a lot of difference, you know. But that's just what I'm just reading it. I'm trying to determine, you know, the balance in it and to get a balance on it. Now, you're saying it's going to come to us, the plan committee, for it's I don't know what. It's a blessing or not. So I just thought there was maybe a need. I know certainly we can ask all the questions now, but you see where I'm at, you know. You know, there's a lot of information here about tourism NI, and I would like to see an information certainly on, you know, the other balance, the balanced view about, you know, responsibilities regarding, you know, the green argument as well, how that plays into the area in Northern Ireland and everywhere, you know.
President McAteer, there is probably the guts of four Labour arch folders behind me. That's one copy of the environmental statement. By all means, we can provide you with the landscape character assessment, because that's roughly about five pages of the NIA document for that one character area. But it will take you significant time to go through the environmental statement if you want to read it from start to finish.
I would also ask councillors to note that the consultation period ends at the end of this week, and for us to go through all the administrative processes in terms of putting it through our planning committee, which takes place on Wednesday, we would have to obviously come to some sort of position this evening to allow it to proceed on Wednesday evening and then be drafted for submission before the end of the week. Councillor Murray.
All right. I would suggest that the council takes a pragmatic approach with every one of these applications on their own individual merits. I dealt with a lot of applications down around the Newtown area. There's 57 applications for wind turbines for my commander council. And while I personally would be in favour of renewable energy, I found myself at times siding with the community that elected me, that I'm part of. And you know, I said to some of the councillors when we were coming in, it's a very, very divisive issue. And you could stand up and you could say about any wind turbine or wind farm in particular that, yeah, it's great and it's going to save on the rates and it's going to, but it could be the most unpopular decision that you would make in a rural, within a rural community. And just each one on their individual merits and what their benefits are going to be to the council.
Thank you, councillor. Anthony, go ahead.
I've had the benefit of spending 7 years heading up the team in the DOE that dealt with wind farm applications, and with the best will in the world, you're not going to become experts in assessing wind farm applications in the space of a couple of weeks or months, never mind the time that we have available. But just in relation to the point that Councillor McAteer raised about the landscape character areas, Northern Ireland is divided up into, there's maybe 150, I think, landscape character areas. And this was work done by the Department of the Environment to assess the character of these distinct areas, the character represented in those areas and their sensitivity to wind farm development. Now, it went through a great many changes, this document, but the area, the landscape area that this wind farm would sit in if it were approved is considered to be sensitive to wind farm development. That is, a wind farm there, you know, could have quite damaging visual impacts. I mean, there are some areas within Northern Ireland that can accommodate substantial amounts of wind farm development. Others, such as this, are considered to be sensitive to them and therefore don't have the capacity to absorb much or indeed any wind farm development. And it very much depends on the scale of the development that's proposed, and this particular development is at the upper end of the scale in terms of size of turbines. They will be visible over a very wide area, and the visual montages, you know, show that.
Thank you, Anthony. Councillor Enright.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, I was very surprised that the planning office has failed to note the report on the National Parks Committee, in which they highlighted the importance of renewable energy playing a part in the overall development of the Mourne's National Park, and in particular the western slopes of the Mourne's. And I think they also made comments about it being important that the South Down area didn't lose out from what would eventually become one of the largest industries in these islands. Secondly, in correspondence with the ex-Minister for the Environment, Minister Atwood, it was noted that the Mourne, and indeed so the Nurien Mourne and the Ards and Down area plans, had failed to reflect in their area plans the regional development strategy, and in particular had failed to reflect the five priorities highlighted by national government to deliver a sustainable energy supply. And in letters to myself and others in my area, the minister acknowledged that these, the former minister acknowledged that these omissions were a significant factor in the delay, the refusal or and withdrawal of many applications, because the planners are only only allowed really to use RE1 or PPS 18 and the other instruments which primarily depend on the visual impact and aspect of renewable energy in deciding upon projects based upon the area plan. Now, it does seem to me, if the Minister has acknowledged that the area plan is fundamentally flawed by failing to reflect the regional development strategy and failing to reflect in particular the five priorities of renewable energy, and they're very specifically written out, and that if planners are unable to refer to those five priorities and have to rely entirely upon the visual impact of renewable energy projects, then of necessity the Minister is correct in there being an undue reliance on the visual aspect and no reliance at all on the national strategy of moving to renewable energy. So I'm just thinking that your advice tonight appears to be flawed below the waterline in terms of having a balanced approach to this subject, insofar as it examines, as Minister Ackwood has pointed out yet again, the visual impacts and doesn't take into account the need for industrial development, and in particular the need within a defined timescale of delivering a sustainable energy supply on the island of Ireland.
Anthony, if you'd like to respond there.
In relation to the deficiencies displayed by planners in terms of failure to adopt or to reflect the regional development strategy, I can tell you from experience that in determining planning applications for wind farms, we took into account all of the material considerations and the need to achieve the targets in terms of renewable energy that was provided and coming on stream. We took account of that with every decision that we made, and in fact, as a result of the decisions that we made across the whole of Northern Ireland, the department was bang on track for achieving the targets that were set by DETI, the 12% initial target, the 40% subsequent target. You know, there are a host of applications across Northern Ireland delivering on that target. I don't think there's any suggestion that South Down or Uri Mornin Down or this area is in some way not contributing. I mean, this is the first wind farm application that has of that scale that has come this way.
Chairperson, I'd like a follow through on that one, because he's just contradicted himself. You mentioned earlier that the Mourne's area would probably have no ability to contribute towards the renewable energy structure because of its visual impact and the importance of the visual impact to the economy. You said that in your earlier comments. Also, in your advice here tonight, as planners, you did not include a single reference to any one of the five priorities laid down by national government under the priority of delivering a sustainable energy supply, and you did not make any reference at all to the regional development strategy. You purely did exactly what ex-Minister Ackwood said, and you referred purely to the visual and other impacts, and you did not take into account the need to develop the economy and move towards renewable energy in your comments.
I think the comments that I made were in relation to this specific wind farm application. I don't think I referred to the entire Mourne's as not being capable. I don't believe that I did. I mean, in relation to. If you feel that our report is partial, that's fair enough. We take on board what you're saying.
I
Councillor, we're going a bit off course now.
We're not determining the planning application. The department determines the planning application. We have referenced the area plan. If you believe there's deficiencies in the area plans are produced at a point in time. They can't hope to incorporate in there things that have developed since they were produced.
The minister admitted they were omitted in error. He's admitted it. I have it right.
Councillor, excuse me. I've asked previously and I've pointed out the comments are supposed to come through the chair. Okay. Thank you. Liam, you're looking in.
Chairman, just to think, just to pick up Councillor Enright's point, you know, if there's issues that he feels are inadequate or not done, which needs to be referenced in the report, that's something that can enter the report. This is a consultation response that the council will want to submit. The council is perfectly entitled to add anything into that report that it wishes clarification on, or say that reference needs to be brought to. So, irrespective of it, you know, we can make amendments to the report and agreeing with the. You have two choices here. You have a choice where you can actually agree to the report, agree to the recommendations as Councillor Riley has proposed. You can go opposite, say, reject it and give reasons for rejecting it, or you can give a consultation response which would pick up particular areas, which means you don't have to take a position onto it, but you can identify a number of areas that you particularly want to respond to. So that's really up to members. So again, you can pick up some of these issues if there's issues in terms of sustainability, renewable energy, or issues on that there. I should say that in terms of the National Park report isn't a document that was adopted by the Assembly. It hasn't been adopted, so therefore it isn't a statutory reference document. It's a document prepared by a working group which wasn't accepted by the Minister. So that's the current status of it. But members are perfectly entitled to take that position and seek clarification. We are a consultee, we are not a decision maker, so we actually can identify a number of particular areas that maybe we want the department minister to take into consideration whenever he is making a decision in this application.
So, councillors, we have a proposal from Councillor Riley. Say that again. You're happy to accept the recommendation, okay.
I make a counter-proposal.
Counter-proposal?
The council makes no observation on this application.
Okay, so we have two proposals. We need a seconder for one or other.
A seconder for Councillor Reddy's not opposite each other. A seconder for Councillor Reddy's proposal.
Seconded by Councillor Barrow-Murray.
Be a seconder for Councillor Enright's council proposal. Just clarify his. Well, it's not a refusal. It's saying is actually we don't make any comment at all. So that's the difference. It's a difference in. If I understand what Councillor Enright's saying is. But you're saying
that
we make no response. We say the council don't wish to respond to this application and just submit it as a reply on that basis.
Okay, when you put the two of them to the meeting chairman, the letter and other changes.
So, chairman, we have a proposal.
So if your proposal is carried, Councillor Enright is a direct negative. If your proposal is lost, in terms of don't accept the officer's recommendation, then we put Councillor Enright to the committee and we take it as it, because it's not a direct negative of yours.
But we need a seconder for Councillor Enright for that to happen, and we don't have one. Seconded by Councillor Clark.
Councillor Brian.
Recorded vote.
We put agreement.
For what? What were you doing?
Okay, record a vote then, Chairman.
You're going to be voting. Yeah.
Patrick, could you just maybe confirm for members here who are planning committee members, is it okay for them to partake in the vote?
Yeah,
was recorded in the minutes. But you might be mine to
abstain. Councillor, are you looking in? Councillor Brown?
Councillor Enright's proposal, because it's about as neutral as you can get, could that be construed though as being in support or otherwise? I think it's just no observation.
No.
Okay. It's then just letting the department determine the application.
Yeah.
In the absence of a response from council, one way or the other, it would be neutral.
Okay, so Councillor Reddy's proposal. Just go through the councillors then. So it's Councillor Reddy's proposal to accept the officer's report as submitted.
Following on from what Patrick said, you're saying that is it not based on what Councillor Reddy has already said, that we're voting on the fact that our planning officers have already given us those reasons, other than us having the person to give
reasons? Sorry, Councillor Reddy, yes, you could allude to the reason you're voting is on the basis
of the planning information. Okay.
Okay. Happy enough, members? Sorry. Go.
Yeah.
Go for it, sorry. I just said no. So, proposal is by Councillor Ray, they accept the officer report as presented. So, we're going through the four. Okay. So, Councillor Andrews, absent. Councillor Bailey?
Four, and can I just have that noted, please, in the minutes that I'm four on the basis of the information within the report?
Councillor Patrick Brown? Councillor Burgess, absent. Councillor Stephen Burns, absent. Councillor Michael Carr, absent. Councillor Casey? Councillor Patrick Clark, absent. Councillor Willie Clark, absent. Councillor Garrett Craig.
Chair, I'm going to abstain because if I take a position on it, it could be construed that I have taken a future position there on land farms generally. So I'm going to abstain.
Okay. Councillor Derma Curran, absent. Councillor Laura Devlin, absent. Councillor Geraldine Donnelly, absent. Councillor Sean Dorn, absent. Councillor Sinead Ennis. Councillor Cadogan Enright.
I guess I'd like Council to note that my grounds for objecting is the error contained within the officer's advice.
Councillor Gillian Fitzpatrick.
I'm abstaining based on the shortness of time of having received the information and lack of understanding on my behalf of the information.
Councillor Glenn Hanna, absent.
Cadogan should also note within the comment.
Councillor Barry Hart. Councillor Harvey, absent. Councillor Hertie, absent. Councillor Highland, absent. Councillor Kimmins. Councillor Larkin. Councillor Lachran. Councillor Declan McAteer. Councillor Kevin McAteer, absent. Councillor Colin McGrath, absent. Councillor Harry McKee. Councillor Mulgrew. Councillor Murnin. Councillor O'Gribben, absent. Councillor Murray. Councillor Brian Quinn. Councillor Henry Reddy. Councillor Rowan. Pacific.
A planner prepared a report setting out their recommendations as to positions of council response. It's entirely based on planning considerations by participating in this vote. Council will be
permit point in future renewable energy development applications in the industry. Up to the old contractors to
seek clarification, Chairman. You can. Councillor Sharvin, absent. Councillor Stokes. Councillor Tenley. And can we clarify any of the information you require? No, the legal advice didn't say it. It said you could take a decision as long as you weren't making a predetermination. This is a consultation on this specific application, which is site-specific with planning reasons. So you can make a decision, sub the council. Indeed, you're going to have to vote on terms of agreeing the council's recommendation at the planning committee. So you can take a position, any position onto it, because it doesn't, as long as you make it clear on the planning reasons that you're making that decision. Okay. Councillor Walker, absent. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 11 for, 1 against, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 9 abstentions. So the officer's report is carried and we present to the planning committee.
Thank you, councillors. Good evening.